All right, Pirate, this is my first podcast segment ever.
Well, you shouldn't be too nervous about it, because you do have plenty of years of radio experience.
Yeah, it's a little different, though, because people are going to be listening on the internet, and who knows who's listening and how many.
Well, yeah, potentially millions of people all the way across the globe could be listening to your every word, but don't let that bother you.
Yeah, no pressure there. Well, folks I work with at the radio group and you have also been encouraging, but they're not pushy like you. None of them forced me to make a one-year plan.
Well, you have to write it down, you have to commit to it so that you can get stuff done and rock the world.
Well, I'm very glad to have you, my BFE, in place of a real announcer.
Well, I don't know, it could be the start of a glorious new career for me.
All right, well, go ahead, introduce me.
Okay, I'll put on my radio voice. You and possibly millions of other people are listening to Wendy Edwards on the internet.
That's good. I like
it. Okay, cool.
Wrap it.
Today I shared the studio with David Borshansky of Albemarle County, Virginia. David is a work-from-home dad who, along with his lovely wife, Jennifer, is raising two young boys. And together they share a philosophy that helps them cope with the rigors of parenting. And they're facing challenges that most of us never will, and they do so with an abundance of optimism. David, I want to thank you and also Jennifer for allowing you to take the time to be here, and I'm excited to have you as my first guest on my first podcast ever for WendyEdwards.com.
Awesome. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, thank you for that. It's my pleasure to have you. Before the segment, you asked me what my intentions are for this show, and the best answer that I could give you is that I want what I do to generate love. And it's something that I see you do in your daily life that I really admire. And so I wanted to kind of expand on that with you for this hour and ask you why you believe happiness is a choice.
Well, that's not an original thought, I should preface. Happiness is a Choice is actually a book by Barry Neal Kaufman.
Okay.
It's a wonderful little gem that really talks about that positive view of life that actually I find in my own life to lead me into being more effective, to be doing the things that I really want to be doing instead of sort of fighting against the things that I don't want to happen to me. And Happiness is a Choice is a nice little nugget you can carry around with you and in your life, and when you're, you know, we're constantly making decisions, we're like these really complicated machines that our ultimate purpose I think is just to make the decisions that are put in front of us, and how we make those decisions not only at least indicates the course we're going to take in our lives, but it certainly makes a difference as to how effectively we move through our lives. So whether we're actually creating difficulties for ourselves or not. So if you're to look, just boil life down into that idea that happiness is a choice and all you have are choices, it's pretty simplifying. You can just look at each choice and say, all right, which way am I going to go? Am I going to go towards something I want, or am I going to go towards or against something that I don't want?
But it's something difficult to discern for some people. I know it is for me sometimes. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I want to please other people, and I will do something that maybe doesn't make me completely happy, but I'm doing it for someone else. And
sure,
sometimes I have to negotiate through that.
I can't say I'm a master at this. I'm not going to pretend to be. But I think through parenting Aiden, for sure, that I've gotten a lot more practice. The point where earlier you said to cope with the parenting, with being a parent, I think a lot of parents feel that way, that it's something that they have to cope with. But for me, I'm actually really excited to be a parent. I'm really, you know, loving the experience. And when I start to not love it, that's my cue to look inside and make sure that I'm getting what I need for myself.
You bring up a good point too. As a parent, you know, a lot of times it's about, you know, pleasing our kids, but at the same time, we're raising them to be individuals and we're raising them to be independent of us as much as possible. So it can be difficult putting our own influence there for our kids to pick up on and also allow them to be who they're going to be. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I see you do with both your sons pretty progressively, and I'm glad to see that happening. I think you'd be a good example for other people too. Now, you grew up in a university town in Ohio that I suspect would have similar charm as Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. But what you most remembered about high school when I asked you was the stress.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a different attitude back then?
Well, I did definitely have a different attitude then. I think I was very much focused on, you know, being a violinist at that time. And as a violinist, I didn't quite fit into the social structure of high school. And I don't know that anybody really fits into the social structure of high school. And that's
when you look back. No. But when you're there, you feel like you're trying to fit in so hard.
Right. Yeah. And I felt like there was something that I needed to be doing differently to get what I wanted out of the high school experience and out of the things that I was doing on the side of that. So
did you put a lot of pressure on yourself back then?
Sure. Yeah. I think a lot of kids do. You know, you're being told what to do. You're not really thinking for yourself what to do, or at least nobody's really helping you with that idea, you know?
Yeah, I do. My God, I do.
So in trying to pretend to be somebody else, I think that's a pretty stressful stressful situation.
Yeah, definitely. And so you've really come a long way, if you think about it, from when you were in high school to where you are today, because it's black and white. I mean, the decisions you made then and the decisions you made now, especially to decide to be happy, mm-hmm. and not dwell on the things that stress you out, is vastly different.
Mm.
Now, this is the first time that you and I have met in person, mm-hmm. but we've handled a lot of our communication through the phone and social media and through the Scottsville Barter Network, which is where I first learned of you, and then through a number of other projects, which led us to becoming friends on Facebook, and then I discovered this blog post that you write for the Option Institute. Can you tell us about the Option Institute?
Sure. The Option Institute is a beautiful place on a mountainside in Massachusetts in the Berkshires. It's where I mentioned Barry Neil Kaufman and Happiness is a Choice, which you brought up. That is where he teaches, and his wife, Samaria, they developed a program for their child who had autism, now is fully recovered and is an executive at the organization. His name's Ron. It's just a really fantastic place where people go to work on themselves, to be inspired and change the things that are making them uncomfortable in their life, whatever they are.
And you had an experience there. You were able to go.
Right.
So how was that for you?
It was fantastic. My first experience there was to go to the startup program for the Sunrise program we are running for Aiden, our son with autism. And it blew my mind, you know, just to go someplace and to be told for the first time that our child is fine the way they are, that we can love our child, you know, to have some enforcement for that, which I think we were naturally in that place. We were loving Aiden from the get-go, saw his potential, did not see what the doctors saw, which was just a lot of complications. Mm-hmm. We just saw, you know, a sweet, beautiful little boy who, you know, obviously we loved and adored.
One of the things you said you love about the Institute itself is that people go there to consider themselves and how their beliefs create their responses to challenges that they face. And so I want to know how a person's beliefs can determine how they respond to those challenges. Because as the parent of a teenager, I face a whole bunch of those every day.
Mm-hmm.
First, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back with your answer. Next, from Home Sweet Scottsville, it's The Seeds on WendyEdwards.com.
Listening to Wendy's first podcast ever on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
The Seeds, straight out of Scottsville, Virginia, with Absence of Light. I'm Wendy Edwards. Thanks for listening to my very first podcast ever. Coming up later this hour, I am going to help deliver a message from the lead singer, Chad Willis, to one of the Seeds' biggest fans. Right now, I'm in the studio with David Borashansky, a husband and father, an IT guy, and a blog writer for the Option Institute in Massachusetts. David says a person's beliefs are what create their responses to the challenges they're faced with. And now, I don't live with you, but I have lived with myself every day, and I'm not always proud of my choices. So tell me how beliefs manifest in the decisions that people make.
I think beliefs are there whether you want to notice them or not, in the way that if you were to see yourself as a really complicated machine, and you operate in a certain way. I think the way that we operate is there's a stimulus. There's something that happens in our lives or that we're paying attention to. We have a thought about it or a series of thoughts about it. I would call those, we can talk about those as beliefs. And then as a result of those beliefs, you then respond to whatever the stimulus is. I feel like I personally am in this process of waking up where I feel like I was a machine just plopped on this planet. You know, fed a lot of garbage for a while, and now I have to figure out why I'm really here and what I'm doing and how I work and how I relate with all the things around me. So I'm really interested in those beliefs, because if I look at those beliefs directly and, you know, I expose them as clear thoughts that I can, you know, just say whether or not I believe in them anymore, you know, I can choose to, you know, enforce those so that I'm really moving towards the responses that I want to have. Or I can decide to change them in some way. And as a result of changing my beliefs, I've seen, you know, over the past few years what I've been working with this, that my responses do change.
Can you give me an example of something recent that you changed?
Sure. Well, for example, with my younger child, Devin, who's 5, he's, you know, talking all the time, right? You know, I think it's probably common for 5-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And how I deal with that has been how I used to deal with it was to get kind of short and try to cut him off in some way. And, you know, looking at my beliefs, I could see that the reason I was cutting him off is that I felt that he needed to pay attention to me, that, you know, this is a two-way street here and whatever, mm-hmm. but just, you know, then exposing that particular belief that it needed to be a two-way street, mm-hmm. I saw that didn't really make sense in this situation. Okay. So
like, what would the situation be? You told him or trying to tell him something and he's talking over you, or what happens?
Or no, you could just walk into the, say, the kitchen. I'm making some soup and and he, you know, just wants a million things. Say he goes to, makes three requests.
Okay.
Before I have a chance to even respond.
To the first one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm familiar with that.
Right. So it's really about going with this process instead of, you know, trying to make something happen.
So how did you deal with it when he'd shoot three requests at you before?
Before, I would get angry.
Okay.
I would actually escalate to anger. I would, you know, start with, you know, Devin, I hear you, you know, give me a chance to answer
you. I hear you, Devin.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I think you can see how that might unfold.
Yeah, I do.
But now I can, I'm comfortable with his talking, you know, and I understand that it's just part of his process, and my process as a parent, and in parallel to that or in response to that, can be easy and just listening and moving with that.
How do you respond to that now?
I listen. You know, that can be my response. A response to a stimulus doesn't necessarily need to be an action. It can be inaction.
And how does he know that you hear him?
Oh, well, eventually I respond.
Okay, well, that's what I'm wondering.
This is kind of a vague hypothetical.
Because my daughter, you know, when she asks me a question, if I don't answer, kind of immediately she'll ask me again, and then again, and then again, and then again. So she doesn't understand that I do hear her the first time. So what do you do differently now when Devin has three questions coming at you?
Now I think I'd just listen to all three questions, wait till he's at a stopping point for himself, and then just make the best choice for myself as to which request to fill or to make it a teaching moment, as to, you know, you give me three things to do, you know, which one do you want me to do first? And, you know, just roll with it.
Yeah. It takes a lot of patience though.
Mm. Yeah. I'm thinking about that, because why does it take patience? And this is the process of finding the beliefs, you know, mm-hmm. I like to consider, you know, why exactly would there need to be patience? And I think that comes with the idea that there's something difficult about it, mm-hmm. that we need to be patient with. And I don't think that there necessarily is anything.
Right. You know? In your heart, it's not difficult to listen to your kid.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it might be useful to just boil it all down, the idea of beliefs, to a quote from St. Thomas of Aquinas. Mm-hmm. He said, "There's nothing intrinsically good or evil until we make it so."
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, yeah, how we look at any particular thing doesn't necessarily mean that's what that thing is. It's just how we're viewing it.
And it can definitely change the circumstance you're in, how you perceive it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. You and your wife, Jennifer, are faced with some challenges that many parents never will be. In fact, there's a reason that you're here with me right now and Jennifer is not. We're going to be right back with more life-loving inspiration from David Borshansky. I want to ask you why that is, and we'll be right back with your answer. More life-loving inspiration from David Borshansky. For now, you can enjoy the music of The Seeds, a three-piece band out of Scottsville that puts on a really great show the last Friday of every month on the lounge side of 330 Valley Street.
The whole town. for sugar, but things are fine. Another fool, another fool, another fool every day. Another fool, another fool in our way. Coming back. Another fool, another fool, another fool every day. Another fool.
Surprise one of the Sweet's biggest fans with a phone call from singer Dirty Chat on WendyEdwards.com.
You're right listening now, to Wendy's first podcast ever on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville
and father,
Podcasting Network.
Uplift, inspire, and encourage what seems like a freer way of living. Is that true for you?
I'm loving your facial expression with that, Wendy.
Well, that's because I'm finding it a little difficult to believe. But I will try, because this is about belief today.
The philosophy that I'm running with, creating as I go based on the philosophy I've gotten from others, it is certainly inspiring to me and definitely has made a lot of positive changes in my life. But I don't claim to you know, be better than anyone else or have it down or anything like that. I just do feel like I have tools that I can use to move towards what I want, to really focus me as a father and husband and all the relationships I have in my life towards being loving more of the time. And I'm just really clear that that's what I want. And I use, you know, the belief system, the stuff we've talked about so far, being beliefs and, you know, how we react to a stimulus. We have a belief and then we respond from there. When I look at particular situations in my life that I'm unhappy with the response, I make it a point to, you know, note those for myself and go back to them, not just let them drop away and then, you know, probably inevitably reoccur. But to go in and look at my beliefs for a little bit and see if there's anything I can change in there to make my next response a happy one.
Now, are those ongoing thoughts for you, or are you like me where, you know, the minute your head hits the pillow at night, all of the thoughts come in?
They're pretty ongoing. Okay. I'm pretty committed to it. It, you know, comes out of being with Aiden and learning how to be his father and in a way that I'm comfortable with. I've found that it takes maintenance.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for being on the podcast with me today and talking about your beliefs. And also, I want to bring up what you do for Aiden. Aiden is 7 mm-hmm. years old.
That's right.
And he's been determined autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And you have worked, along with Jennifer, your wife, to make his world as stress-free as possible, it seems like.
Absolutely, yes.
And so you've had the assistance of the Option Institute more recently,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure lots of books, because I see that you read quite a bit.
More and more.
Yeah.
I should say that the Autism Treatment Center of America is the organization that does the training for the Sunrise Program, and they're just sort of down the mountain from the Option Institute. They're definitely affiliated.
So. Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about how your environment works with Aiden and with Devin, because mm-hmm. Devin isn't facing the same challenges?
That's a great question. Aiden has a playroom which was designed to be distraction-free. So there's like frosted windows and shelves with toys that are up off the ground so that he has to ask for them, and there's no clutter around. We're about 3 years into the program now, and Aiden is no longer as distractible as he once was. And so now instead of having the door closed, one-on-one, really focused attention all the time, we've opened it up some. Devin comes in, you know, there's some playing together, not a whole lot happening yet, but he's starting to flow into our family life in a more typical way, Aiden is. So that's beautiful to see.
Yeah. Now, how was it you first noticed that he wasn't, would you say, thriving?
Sure. From birth, there were some indicators early on. We didn't focus on it, but we certainly noticed some things. Something felt a little funny. He didn't cry much at all. He didn't cry when he was born. And I think that was probably our main concern. And then he did things like look up and above himself more so than in front in a typical way. He didn't seem to really lock onto faces and things like that. So we had our suspicions. It went on for a while. He wasn't actually diagnosed with autism until he was 2 years old.
Mm-hmm. Something I noticed is that Aiden's autism is different from other kids' autism, or that something I've noticed is that autism is different for every kid.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed I have a coworker whose son has autism, my nephew has autism, and Aiden has autism, and it seems like they all have very different challenges and very different abilities.
Sure. Sure.
So I'd like to kind of, well, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, Aiden is quite unique. I've met a lot of children in other families, obviously, not, you know, being in the special needs community for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. And he tends to be a very sweet and low-key in the sense of, I wouldn't say he's relaxed all the time, but he's, from outward appearance, is just sort of hanging out, just sort of sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of children with autism seem to have a lot of activity going on.
Physical activity.
Physical activity, okay. Jumping around, running around. So the reason for that, you know, I certainly can't say, but it does seem that environmental factors are a huge component in the triggering of autism, whatever they are. And, you know, the toxins, the vaccines, it depends, you know, for each child, what actually sets it off. And then how it manifests, obviously, is unique based on that, each child's or person's biology.
Mm-hmm. But you had to make a decision when you had Aiden, and as you watched him grow, and as you watched, you know, which abilities he was picking up and which were just not coming yet. You had to make a decision to love.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized he was your son, and I realized that there's an intrinsic love that you have for your child. However, there's still a decision that you need to make through love to take care of your child and you need to decide what beliefs you're going to hold over them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've noticed that you and Jennifer have been careful about what you believe for Aiden.
Hmm. That's kind of a cool way to look at it. I think we've obviously made a lot of changes in our lifestyle, but to actually see that we're basically changing our cerebral architecture around our son and to support him, I think is kind of a cool way to see that. We have been, I think, just going, you know, honestly, I don't know that we stopped and said, all right, are we going to love our son or not? But definitely that is a choice that we've made along the way. Mostly our focus, I would say, has been to do what we can in the moment, mm-hmm. to do the very best we can, whether it be a new kind of therapy or starting the Sunrise program, continuing the Sunrise program, mm-hmm. you know, doing dietary things. Supplements, things like that.
Now, for anyone listening to the podcast today, where can they go to learn more about the Sunrise program that you're using with Aiden?
I think it's autismtreatment.org is the website for the Autism Treatment Center of America. You can also go on Facebook and find their fan page. You can look at videos on YouTube. I think there's a series of 12 clips that's great for anyone who would be interested in seeing what it takes to start up a program. You don't necessarily need to go to go to Massachusetts to the training programs to mm-hmm. start a program for your child. You can start with 10 minutes a day and just really focusing on some of the techniques that you could see in those clips on YouTube. I think if you search for autism solutions or something like that.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm going to go back to something you said earlier about high school. You said that high school was a stressful time for you and that it was difficult to fit in and you were trying to play violin, which is very different from high school activities. And I want to bring up something I asked you while not on the air, and that was if you had a 10-minute speech that you could give to high school students, what would it be about? Do you remember what you said?
Yeah, I think I said that I would like to give a speech about living in an inspired life.
Yeah.
And I would love to do that. I think that would be great. I feel like we are, in our society, in our culture, at any rate, we are taught about labels and all these static elements to living. And I'm more of a Zen guy, where there's a way that there's a flow to life, and that you, if you move with that flow, then you're really kind of on the right track. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are constantly trying to fit yourself into this package or that package, I'm going to get this job, I'm going to need this to, in order to feel good about myself, you know, things like that, then you lose sight of what's going on. You lose your presence with your own life.
So if you could look back and tell David in high school, you know, how to look at life now that you've learned a new way, what are some key things that you would want him to know?
Certainly to take it easy. To just, you know, be more accepting of myself, the people around me, to maybe go through a day and just see how many times I judge something or mm-hmm. feel that somebody's judging me. Mm-hmm. And know that judgments have absolutely no purpose whatsoever, and see how that changes things.
David, I want to thank you for being on the podcast with me today. And again, thanks to Jennifer, your wife, and your children for being kind enough to share you with me for the hour. And before you go, can you give out that web address where everybody can read your blog posts?
I think it's blog.option.org, or you can go into Facebook and find it that way, Option Institute blog.
All right. And is your Hope for Aiden fundraiser still ongoing?
It is ongoing, at least mentally. Currently, we don't have anything going on, but yes, we're always looking to raise more funds for Aiden Sunrise program.
All right. And I hope you'll stay in touch with us.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Wendy.
I'm Wendy Edwards. I'll be back with what I hope will be an exciting moment for one of the Seed's biggest fans. And we'll see if we can get her on the phone next on WendyEdwards.com.
You're listening to Wendy Edwards on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Next time on Wendy's second podcast ever.
You know, I need a name for my podcast. Maybe I can solicit names for it.
And Wendy's guests will show how anybody who thinks they can't make it on their own really can. Tuesday, February 8th on WendyEdwards.com.
Thanks for listening to my very first podcast on WendyEdwards.com. I'm Wendy Edwards, and I'm calling Petra Monaco of Scottsville. She is a big-time fan of the Seeds, who we have featured on this podcast, and we're going to deliver a message from singer Dirty Chad Willis that we know is going to be a big surprise for Petra. She's currently waiting at the bedside of her 7-year-old son, Lennon, who has urea cycle disorder, which has ultimately cost him the use of his liver 3 times. Now, Lennon's just received his 3rd liver transplant at Pittsburgh Children's Hospital, and as soon as we have contact, we'll get an update on his condition, and then Chad Willis of the Seeds has something he'd like to share.
Hello.
Hey, Petra, it's Wendy. I'm calling to see how you and Lennon are doing.
Okay, well, Lennon is stable. He's still intubated, which means, you know, the machine is still breathing for him, and they're trying to figure out ways to get him off the machine so that he can be Lennon again. His liver is starting to function better and better every day. The lungs are going to be a problem because he has a hepatopulmonary syndrome, so his lungs are going to take a long time to recover. But overall, he's doing really, really well considering.
And that means you're going to be in the hospital for quite a while, right?
Yeah, we're going to estimate it at the beginning. They told us 2 months, but it really all depends on how fast Lennon is able to recover. No. So it could be 2 months or more.
Now,
what
can people do while you're in the hospital to help you out? Because you've got you and Lennon in the hospital in Pittsburgh, and then you've got your boyfriend Kevin and your other kids here in Scottsville.
Right. So one of the big challenges that we've come across is feeding ourselves while we're here. At this rate right now, it's costing me $5 a meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So that's $15 a day, and that adds up. I'm not a big coffee drinker, and I charge you for coffee.
I hope not $5 for coffee.
Coffee should just be free. And the other thing is, you know, care packages have been coming in slowly but surely with gift cards to help.
Gift cards to where?
Because I'm not a big eater, and all my energy goes with Lennon and everybody else. So gift cards and gift packages to snack food or cup of ramen noodles. I got like 12 of them yesterday. It was like, God, I can eat 12 times now and I don't have to worry about spending money. Mm-hmm. I still crochet while I'm here, so yarn is always welcome for me personally.
Excellent.
I haven't read in 6 months and I'm starting to read again. So books are helpful, I think. If you know what the person likes. As far as on the home front, Kevin is unable to come every day due to his work schedule and money.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got
to
drive from Virginia to
take care of the other children, but then we're like, okay, when he can come up, his gas money is costing him probably $120.
Ooh.
Just to drive up and then drive back. And that's not, you know, he's going to have to stay in the room for the night and still sleep and can't afford a hotel room, so we're just going to have to convince the nurses that both of us are going to be here, and they're just going to have to be okay with it.
All right, well, you know Chad Willis from The Seeds, the lead singer. He had a suggestion that I thought you might like to hear.
Hey, Petra, this is Chad from The Seeds, and as you know, we play the last Friday every month at 330 Valley Street, here in Scottsville. This month, February, we've decided to dedicate the night to you and Lennon as a thank you for just being our friends, being our fans. And, I know you can't be there yourself, but, you and Lennon are definitely in our hearts. And we love you guys.
All right. So what do you think about The Seeds playing 330 Valley Street the last Friday of February for you?
Totally. You know, we love his music, and he's such a great guy, and the band and everything.
So what do you think about that, having a concert just for you?
A little speechless and emotional right now.
A little what?
Emotional?
Yeah, I can imagine.
I love them. I love Chad and all the guys that are playing. I love their music, and I'm just in awe that they would do that for us. Just a little person.
You are a little person, and that actually lets me get into what I'm going to tell you next. Petra, not only are we going to celebrate you, Lennon, and your family with The Seeds at 330 Valley Street, but I've talked with food services at Pittsburgh Children's Hospital, and it turns out that they sell these $5 meal vouchers that you can use for food served in your room, or you can redeem them in the cafeteria. And because you're a tiny chick, I know you barely eat, which is why I can afford to hook you up with some of those vouchers. So you've got a month's worth of meal vouchers coming to you today.
Oh, my God. You suck.
That's not the response I was hoping for.
Well, you know what I mean. You know I love you, but it's been a rough night. Lennon's blood pressure is kind of going crazy stuff. So it's been a rough night of sleep.
All right, well,
even emotional about that, so.
All right, well, you just know your friends and your neighbors are happy to do what we can. And I've got to wrap this up. So you let Lennon know that we're praying for him to get stronger and healthier and for both of you to get home to Scottsville.
All right, I love you guys.
All right, we love you. And this is a good place to wrap up my first podcast ever. I want to thank my BFE webcomic illustrator, Steve Dismukes, for introducing today's show. You can check out his work at darkplaceswebcomic.com. Thank you, Chad Willis and The Seeds, also 330 Valley Street Restaurant and Lounge in Scottsville. I'm going to let The Seeds take it away with Hey You on WendyEdwards.com.
gotta get you off my back today. This constant aggravation's here to stay. No, I don't believe you're going to work my soul.
Listen next Tuesday for Wendy's second podcast ever.
I'll be using social media to solicit names for my online show.
And Wendy's frugal guests will stretch your home decorating dollars Tuesday, February 8th on WendyEdwards.com.
This show would not be possible without the help of God, OTB Podcast, and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Podcast yourself at OTBpodcast.com.